It seems anyway that there are so few eligible guys of the sort of 20, 30 something, particularly 30 something around. Well, that's why you hear about the Bridget Jones syndrome, but you don't hear the male equivalent.
Qui s'est brillé dans les salons, ni un type fort.
All the decent men are already married, and the free ones, there don't seem to be that many around. The ones that are kind of not terribly desirable.
Je cherche un homme, un homme.
It may be an age-old complaint that there are no good men around anymore, but when the 2001 census results were first published 2 years ago, it looked as if there might be some truth in it. 800,000 men appeared to have vanished from the population. This is a detective story by numbers about where they've gone to.
I don't really know why there are a lack of men. I mean, I've been living in Switzerland for 4 years. There's an awful lot of expats living out there, you know, in their 30s, making lots of money.
There seem to be more women than men when you go out to clubs and stuff now, yeah.
And do your friends complain about that? Do they find it difficult?
My friends do, yes. I find myself.
When the statisticians added up the numbers from the 2001 census, they found a big hole in the figures. There were 1 million fewer people than they'd expected from the population estimates, which are based on previous censuses and on births, deaths and migration. Most of the disappearing population was young or youngish men in their 20s, 30s and early 40s. Women aren't used to finding men in short supply. More boys are actually born than girls, and they usually continue to outnumber them until well into middle age. This isn't what's supposed to happen. So where have all the young men gone? Ian Diamond was one of the architects of the 2001 census.
It is more difficult for women to meet men in some parts of the country. That may end up with us having fewer partnerships and hence potentially fewer children.
Last spring, Len Cook, director of the Office for National Statistics, was still trying to work out what happened.
We still want to find answers to it. Continuing to make sense of it all is another year or two's work for us yet.
These trends that we're seeing, they're not happening in London, they're not happening in Hertfordshire, they're not happening in rural Brecon, they're happening everywhere. Throughout the nation, we are seeing these trends everywhere.
There's your form, and there's a leaflet inside explaining about the census.
Right.
And the envelope's prepaid, so you don't need to put a stamp on it. Just please complete the form and return it as soon as possible after the 29th of April.
Okay, then.
The 2001 census will give a picture of Britain that helps plan all our futures. Complete the form and complete the picture.
It was billed as the most accurate census ever. The Office for National Statistics had also developed a sophisticated survey to fill in all the gaps where the census wasn't able to count everyone. And yet there was still an inexplicable hole at the end of it all. Local authorities demanded to know where their populations had gone to. The ONS was ridiculed for suggesting that all the missing young men were overseas, partying in Ibiza. Simon Briscoe, statistics editor of the Financial Times, was one of the most assiduous reporters of the story.
I can imagine the picture in the ONS. They'd been waiting for a year or so while the computers cranked all these numbers, and then the figure would have come out, and it would have been so shockingly low, over 1 million lower than the figure they imagined. And I just would love to have been a fly on the wall to see what happened in those few weeks they had between being delivered that number and having to deliver a figure to the deadline that they'd published. And I think this idea that 1 million people, mostly men, had gone overseas was really about all they could come up with in the time they had available.
Kit Malthouse, deputy leader of Westminster Council, lost a quarter of his expected population in the census, the biggest drop in the country. Westminster's been the most dogged of all the local authorities in challenging both the accuracy of the census and the claim that the missing men were all abroad. Losing people means losing money.
Once that argument was used, we really started to get suspicious that they didn't have any rational explanations for some of the various differences that were appearing in the census. And what we found throughout the exercise with them is that one by one, their arguments against us have just fallen over like skittles. And really, I think that that headline, that all these guys had disappeared to Ibiza, was probably the most important statement he made on the census from our point of view, for that reason, that it illustrated his lack of argument for the various anomalies in the census.
I'm starting my search for Britain's missing young men in Amsterdam. The ONS at first said that most of them had emigrated during the 80s and 90s. A few of them should be in Holland. There's a large British community, and it's easy to find casual work. I'm not expecting to find all of them in one night, but I might get some idea why they're leaving the country. The best place to start looking for them is probably the coffee shops.
When you came, did you have any idea of how long you'd stay?
Not really. I thought I was going to just spend maybe 6 weeks away, 2 weeks in Amsterdam, and then go on to Portugal. And it turned out that I spent the next 4 years here.
Yeah, did you know that there'd been, that when they found the count, they found there were 800,000 fewer men than they expected to be in the country?
No, I didn't, but I can imagine that most of them probably went partying. Many people were driven away when the Criminal Justice Bill was brought in. From then on, people left England.
What were you doing when you first came here?
In warehouse. Working in the warehouse, driving forklifts, just sort of shipping out goods.
So, do you move around a lot for work?
Yeah, we basically go where the work is, where the money is, I suppose. I've had about five or six different jobs. Worked in three places over in Holland and a couple of places in England, but just up and down the country.
It might also be worth looking for them in the bars.
I just went out and went for it. I had nothing to lose, so I thought, well, you know what I mean, they've got jobs on building sites and...
Do you get a lot of young British men still coming over and working there?
Some, yeah. Mainly from Northern England. Manchester, you get a lot of Manx gases, Geordies, like, whatever.
I actually came to Amsterdam for one day with me and my mate Filty. I have my own company now. It's actually worth quite a few million euros nowadays.
How come you ended up staying?
Sex was better than everything in Amsterdam than it was in England. English women don't know how to make love and English men don't. And I had an education in sex. Boys. Boys.
Boys keep swinging. Boys always work it out. Some of the men who slipped out of the figures. Men who wouldn't have been recorded as emigrating because they thought they were only leaving for a short time. Men who may not have gone for good and may well reappear in the next census. It's a generation that's exploring the world more freely than its parents, coming and going without being fixed in one particular place. Danny Dorling is Professor of Human Geography at Sheffield University. He's developed an atlas based on the findings of the census and is convinced that we're seeing a changing pattern of migration.
This is a new way of thinking for us. And other countries have had this kind of thing for years. Ireland's a classic case of exporting huge portion to its population. And the idea that Britain is such a country that for a large number of people it's not a country worth living in is quite hard to grasp. And it's these clusters of areas all around rivers, around the Mersey, around the Tyne and the Tees and around the Clyde, which have had this change. And it's very hard to think that there was some great systematic error in the enumeration just in these places next to rivers that used to have great shipyards and near coalfields. You know, unless you have some conspiracy of enumerators to do a bad job here, it doesn't fit. But what does fit is the story of industrial change.
So how come no one noticed this was happening? It's partly down to the way we measure migration. We're not very good at it. Our only method is the International Passenger Survey, which interviews 250,000 people a year coming in and out of the country. It's a crude way of doing it because it can't tell the whole story. Until now, it's only people who say they're leaving the country for at least a year who are recorded as emigrants. The ONS now think that definition's too narrow. There's also been no system of following up on people who say they're leaving for a short time and then end up living abroad long term. Len Cook, Director of the Office for National Statistics.
The French, they estimate they lost just under 200,000 young men. They thought they were either on the west coast of the United States or London. And again, it's that issue of how do you corroborate this. Australians have some real problems with students that come in from Asia, for example, and their statistics say that they've come permanently and they're recorded as a part of the population change. But most students, you know, these days with air travel, don't stay there for long. So what's really interesting out of that is that even countries with border papers where you actually fill in a form and state how long you're going to stay actually have problems with migration now because you don't know how long people are going to stay for. So I guess it just demonstrates it's getting harder to measure migration.
But if migration's so hard to measure, how can we be sure the ONS is getting it right now? Ludie Simpson is a statistician at Manchester University and has been closely involved in the debate about the census.
The politics of immigration make it imperative for the government to count that extremely well, whereas there's not such a pressure to count immigration. And I think some of the assumptions they've made have been convenient to be able to support their stories, which is understandable, but it doesn't exactly get us out of the hole of being able to accurately measure the population.
It's been highly embarrassing for the ONS. They've had to revise the population estimates for the past two decades. It's shaken faith in national statistics, the bedrock, not only of planning, policy and local government spending, but of all our notions about ourselves as a nation, including our life expectancy and our standard of living. Len Cook admits that the dramatic increase in migration caught them unawares.
Migration hasn't generally been a significant force of population change until fairly recently. But if you take the last 5 years, well over two-thirds of population change has been driven by migration rather than natural increase. Secondly, the whole nature of migrants has changed. So before the 70s, 60s, 50s, people that migrated tend to do so fairly permanently. Like when my grandparents left Newcastle in 1913, they left to create a line of little cooks, which they did, and there are cooks that continue to create cooks where they landed in Dunedin. When I arrive in London, reversing that flow, I'm very much a 21st century economic migrant. I'm here because I'm part of the international job market, and I'm still a Dunedin lad in all other respects. And I'm not sure that our statistical systems have been able to keep up with the change in the very nature of what migration is.
Part of the confusion has also been a hangover from the 1991 census. There were a million people fewer than expected then as well, most of them men, just like now. But the statisticians didn't trust the result. It was a year after the poll tax riots, and the thinking was that people were avoiding the census to dodge the tax, and that's why they weren't showing up in the figures. So the statisticians adjusted the numbers. In 2001, the ONS decided that that had been a mistake. The missing population hadn't been hiding at all. It didn't show up in the census because it wasn't here to count. Several hundred thousand men had been added to the population figures when they weren't in the country. Still with me? What it all adds up to is that we haven't had a reliable census for at least 20 years.
From the nation's expense account to the nation's stock-taking. Four completed in the same week as the budget was the biggest social survey yet attempted in Britain, the census. And ever since Monday, 50,000 enumerators have been on the job collecting and checking the big buff forms which they had given out to each householder only the week before. Preliminary results, such as the first count of heads, will be out by midsummer, and more details will follow later. But it may take several years before all the results are given of Britain's census in 1951.
50 years on, it's become much harder to count the population by knocking on people's doors. Part of the problem today is that people aren't always willing or available when you want to count them.
This is Manningham. This is all back-to-back housing here. And it's actually some of the poorer housing, I think, in Bradford. I mean, there are... Round the back here there are houses that are actually derelict and a couple of houses on this street were burnt out at the back.
Mark Clayton was an enumerator in Bradford. It lost 4% of its expected population in the census. He walked me round the streets he counted, along with the statistician Ludie Simpson.
On this particular street, I mean, you would knock on the door and there were people in the house and they wouldn't come to the door. You could put the form through the door then, and then I had to go back to it perhaps two or three times, but you wouldn't get them on that. And so they would be a household that by and large would probably not fill the form in and be missed.
Did you have a sense when you were an enumerator that you were missing a lot of people?
Well, I personally didn't, because I went back five and six times to some houses where I knew there were people.
But at the same time, there's a different attitude to government, I think. We've been persuaded over the last couple of decades that individuals are individuals and government doesn't have much to do with their organisation and freedom and so on. Especially young people who've been brought up in the last 20 years don't see a government inquiry as so compulsory. So you have every 10 years a compulsory census, legally, that's the occasion for the biggest civil disobedience in the decade.
I think there's a lifestyle thing there, I definitely think there is, and the men that are missing, particularly young men, I think perhaps are just a bit more fluid in what they're about. Perhaps the advertising didn't get through to certain groups of people, I believe. And certainly, I was having to explain what it was about all the time. You know, so I was sort of saying to people, you know, if you want good schools around here, then you need to fill the forms and you need to let them know how many children are living in a house or how many people are here. If they think there are less people around here, then there won't be as much money coming into the city.
Were you surprised when you heard that the Office for National Statistics are coming and having another look at Bradford?
No, I mean, obviously, when the first figures came out, that was... didn't seem right to us. We definitely knew we had more people than that. I mean, it was almost believable. It was funny because it wasn't so out that it was like, this is really wrong, but it just didn't feel right when we heard the first figure.
The designers of the census knew that they wouldn't be able to count everyone, so they used a follow-up survey to estimate the numbers they'd missed. But in areas that were hard to count, particularly inner cities, the methods couldn't always cope. In 2003, the Office for National Statistics announced that it had looked at the figures again and found 190,000 of the missing men, most of them between the ages of 25 to 34. At least that meant I didn't have quite so many to find. One minute they're missing, the next there's a deluge. What it also means is that there could still be more lurking somewhere in the country, as yet undiscovered. Who are they, and why couldn't the enumerators find them?
It may have been a case that they buzzed and I wasn't around, or they may have delivered it and it got lost in the mass of post and pizza leaflets and takeaways that fill our mailbox.
Well, I suppose I live a very busy lifestyle. Don't spend much time in the house for a start. I mean, there are times when I don't even get around to look at my bank account. You know, my bank details for sort of 6 months. A census, I suppose, in terms of personal admin would come quite low down the list. Because I moved around quite a lot in London, all my mail still goes to my parents' address, where they live.
And you were aware that you could be prosecuted for not filling it in?
Yes. But, you know, you can be prosecuted for a lot of things, and very often you're not.
Any statistician or veteran of surveys will tell you that young men are notoriously difficult to count. They don't like filling in forms. They don't have much sense of civic duty. They have more reason to dodge the authorities, and they're never in when you call. There's not much evidence for any of this. How could there be when they're never around when you want to do a survey to explain why they're so hard to... survey?
It was one bit of paperwork amongst many others that are kind of tiresome to fill in, and I don't really know what happened to it. It just kind of went down the back of the sofa, I think, probably with a gas bill.
You moved down to a place in London where you had friends, you slept on floors for a good 3 months, you worked for free for a long time. It was a case of, well, I'm not really sure where I'm going to be in the next 4 months, so I'm not going to call up someone and ask them to bring a form around to the place where I'm going to be in the next month.
Part of the problem is that people move around a lot more, particularly men, or so it seems from the census. Not just from one country to another, but within the same city, or even neighbourhood. Ian Diamond, Chief Executive of the Economic and Social Research Council, who helped devise the 2001 census.
If you were actually to try and count the population of an inner city at midday on a Sunday, at midday on a Wednesday, or at 10 p.m. on a Thursday, the numbers would be incredibly different. And what the census is effectively doing, I believe, is trying to count the population, you might argue, at midday on the Sunday. In other words, where people normally are usually resident. If you're then interested in providing services for people in the week,
then they're going to be living somewhere else. Now that's a very much more complex question, and my view is that in the future, if we wish properly to understand the dynamics of population in the nation, what we have to do is have a much more complex system of collecting data on population, which actually properly answers those sorts of questions.
But it's also getting harder to pin people down to one address, because it's no longer the only way to be contacted. We don't need an address as we used to conduct the daily business of our lives. And that makes it difficult for the census, because we're all counted by household. Tom Hennell is an analyst at the NHS Executive Northwest and has made a close study of the census.
People have email addresses, they have mobile phones. They have other ways of being contacted that don't require them to live in one place in particular. And it appears to be the case that there are quite a lot of people who are quite content with that. It looks as if younger men are more likely to be comfortable in not having a usual address.
So once again, the failure of the census to count young men is evidence of profound social change, something we might have guessed was happening, but which we'd never been able to measure. What's more, 400,000 people said on the census form that they hadn't had a fixed address the year before. Could that be why so many men were missed on census day? Because they were between addresses? Tom Hennell.
If we look at them, the largest number are either people living on their own, now living on their own, or living as a couple. Relatively few are families. Quite a large number are people who are living in communal establishments, in hostels. They tend typically to be younger, and they tend to be biased roughly 2-1 in favour of men.
The ONS doesn't think the figure is reliable enough to draw conclusions from, but it's an intriguing possibility, and there may be evidence from other sources to back it up. The New Policy Institute estimates that almost exactly the same number of people are effectively hidden homeless, most of them men, and most of them sleeping on friends' and relatives' floors. Some of them may also have been missed by the census, because it only asks people who are usually resident in a household to fill in the form. If you have trouble understanding what usually resident means, you're not alone.
Well, being foreign, I wasn't sure I had to do it. And same as like loads of things like voting, I don't feel like really concerned by it.
So how long have you lived here?
5.5 years now. I didn't think it really applied to me, and same, and still today I receive loads of mail that I don't think applies to me at all. Like electricity bills, council tax, phone bills.
I'd been in the country for less than a year, and I was here just basically to pay off a student loan, and I thought I'd be going back within 12 months. And I thought, well, you know, there's no point in completing the form. It's going to probably take me about an hour and a half out of my busy schedule. When I did see it there, I thought, oh, you know, I don't really want to complete the form now at this stage. I felt tired, and just looking at that document just made me feel very, very tired too. I left it there, hoping to possibly go back the next day, you know, and open it and complete it. But I never got around to it, unfortunately. It probably ended up at the bottom of the dustbin.
I do think the census failed to count all of the foreign nationals who are currently living in Britain.
Simon Briscoe, statistics editor of the Financial Times.
One can be pretty sure that it failed to count all of the illegal immigrants who are in the country, although we've no idea how many there are. They are clearly a prime category of people who would have no interest whatsoever in filling in the form. But I think the census will have also missed many tens of thousands of foreign nationals who are here legally. London is full of young people who are here as students and working in banking, IT, consultancy. And I suspect they will have looked at the definition of a usual resident, and faced with a form in a foreign language to them, I think they will have chosen not to fill in that form. And certainly judging by the research I've done, speaking to trade bodies and embassies, I'm convinced that all the major countries of the world, the census has under-recorded the number of their nationals who are currently here.
Then there are the men who simply don't want to be counted.
This is the Alex Park estate. This is quite typical of quite a few estates in Manchester, where the overall quality of the housing looks extremely good, and is extremely good.
Robert Barr, Director of Manchester Geomatics, is a key figure in solving some of the riddles of the census. In 2003, he found 14,000 addresses that had been missed in Manchester. 26,000 people have since been added to the population. Part of the problem was that the Office for National Statistics was using address lists which were 3 years old. This was particularly critical for Manchester, as parts of the city were rebuilt during that time, and most of those areas were undercounted in the census. He took me round one of the neighbourhoods that had lost a lot of men.
Manchester's always had a reputation for building good quality social housing. You can recognise the houses which have been sold off by their additional features and different coloured doors, but a lot of these improvements, for example all these porches here, were all put on by the local authority. This is the sort of area where there would be quite a lot of single parent families, because they're ideal single parent family homes, enough bedrooms for the children quite close to the city centre. And unfortunately, because of the crime rate in this area, fairly unpopular with other tenants.
So is this an area where you suspect that there may have been an undercount of men, or that
I think it's extremely likely that this is an area where men would not want to be counted. Some of these areas are notorious as Manchester gangland areas. There's a very strong macho culture amongst the men. The patterns of cohabiting are very complex, so it would be very difficult quite often for many of the families to realistically say whether a man was living there or not. If there was a danger of losing benefits by saying that a man was living there, then one would opt naturally for saying that a man wasn't living there.
Don't you think that it was absolutely crucial for the ONS to make it far, far clearer than they have done that the information they gather is confidential?
I think so. I think that they spend too much time convincing the libertarian Guardian reader, who is making a big fuss about it, that it's confidential, rather than people who will benefit most from the census. So I think that a stronger public information campaign would help. But my guess is that we're going to start registering the population in a different way, that a census is just no longer the most efficient and effective way to get accurate figures for areas like this.
Do you think there are more women than men in this neighbourhood?
Well, I say there's more men than women. A lot more men than women.
Do you remember the census? Do you remember when they came round with the forms?
Yeah, I do actually, yeah. I didn't fill it in myself, though.
Why didn't you?
Didn't find it interesting.
So that means that I've just found one of the missing men.
All right. If you want to put it like that, okay then.
So do you remember filling it in?
No.
Do you remember actually receiving the form? I remember receiving the form.
Thanks. No, I wouldn't have filled it in myself personally.
Because
I don't really see what difference it would really make for the people around here anyway. Like
that there,
the wall which has been smashed out here. Been waiting 2 months now for them to come and fix it. They've had a look at it, but haven't fixed it. The drains. What else? The rubbish all round over there, innit? No, I don't think they'd be interested in spending money here at all. Most likely prefer to put it in their own pockets.
Most of the people I've been speaking to in Alex Park don't seem to remember much about the census. But there's one man I approached who said he was an illegal immigrant and he certainly didn't fill it in, and he certainly wasn't going to talk to us on the record about it. It was just too much of a risk. The first door I approached was shut very firmly in my face, so I can just imagine how difficult it was for the enumerators going from house to house. Remember that. Just a 70s baby, early 80s child. Reminiscing about the days in a brickbat car. So what do you do about the men who don't want to be counted and don't much care about it either? Tom Hennell, health analyst in the northwest of England, is concerned.
It looks as if these are population groups that we need to know much more about, because their health behaviour looks very different from the behaviour of people of the same sort of age 20 years ago. If we don't know where these people are, it's very difficult to calculate whether from counts of drugs users or counts of people with early death due to alcohol disorder, to calculate what the rates, the relative risks, the local risks are. increasingly we're in health services, we're interested in looking at population risk in younger people, particularly younger men, but also younger women. If we get the numbers wrong in a locality, we may be directing resources to the wrong areas.
Census 2001.
Count me in.
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 Part of the problem is clearly that very few people are aware that the census is confidential, despite the advertising campaign. I spoke to about 30 different men who hadn't filled in the census, and very few of them realise what it's used for. Perhaps the ONS needs a far more targeted campaign to appeal to the people they're missing. Ruth Turner is director of Vision 21, a consultancy in Manchester. She's had great success in reaching the kinds of people who don't fill in the census.
We've got whole boxes of tricks, if you like, of ways to encourage people to take part in things, whether it's using texting or mobile phones or getting people to contact each other or holding them in different places or in different languages or at different times. There's dozens and dozens of ways to do it. But when we sit down, the first question that we'll ask ourselves before we think about what's the right methodology is, why should they? What difference will it make? What's in it for them? And if you can't answer those questions, then it doesn't matter how clever or how resourceful or how robust your methodology is, it won't work.
Inadvertently, the census, or rather the hole in the census, has given us a glimpse into how the country has changed in the last 10 to 20 years. If the trend of vanishing men is set to continue, and the ONS thinks that it will, shouldn't someone be systematically looking for the vanished population? The geographer Danny Dorling.
No research has been done which has actually found out where these young men are at all, whether they're hiding in this country or anywhere abroad. Research tends to use official sources of data, and one thing we know about these young men is they're good at avoiding official sources of data.
But obviously it's a very interesting area of research.
It's academically interesting. The sad thing is that it isn't of great interest for government, who would be the main funder of this. For government, in many ways, for many of their statistics, this is wonderful news. I mean, overnight, when the census figures came out, their target on young people going to university, they got from 41%, which they had on one day, the next day, 43% young people going to university, as far as they're concerned, because there are fewer young people in the country. So they got that much faster to the 50% target. If you look at all the success figures for the New Deal in employment and all the rest of the government measures, they all look much better because these men are not here. It isn't necessarily in the interest of government to find out too much about them. Our government tends to worry about the conditions of people within the borders of the country and doesn't worry about people who are born here or go overseas.
So what's the future for the census? Britain has been counting people like this since 1841, but the fallout from 2001 is going to bring changes, and there's already been an acknowledgement that the census alone may no longer be enough. The ONS has had a rough ride since the census results were first published, and Len Cook is doing everything he can to convince local authorities that next time it will be different.
In order to plan the 2011 census, we want to be able to explain the population change that's occurred, and we want to be able to make sure that we're measuring the things that are causing that change, but we also want to know what risk we've got through uncertainty within the next couple of years, so that we're actually able to take some more corrective action where we can. One of the projects that we're working on with other countries in the European Union are ways in which we can collaborate on measuring migrant flows. The second thing is trying to measure the population more frequently in a sample. So we're looking in 2007 at bringing together all our household surveys and having one module which is in every survey, which will give us a very large ongoing population survey, and it will help us independently estimate the population each year.
The ONS is also developing a population register, bringing together information that already exists about us in a variety of government sources. It would give the government unprecedented access to information about us and would have to be authorised by legislation, exactly the sort of thing that the men who avoid the census fear the most.
It was another thing to keep tabs on me, like a credit check or someone knowing where you are. That creates more hassle when people know where you are.
I don't really rely on the local authority much anyway. It all seems to be sort of one-way traffic paying bills. We don't really see much coming back from them, so they don't scratch my back, so why should I bother scratching theirs?
the idea of being confronted with a government form which tells them where you are, exactly what you're doing, and also makes you liable to pay the council tax is something that people wouldn't be willing to do.
Robert Barr, director of Manchester Geomatics, has doubts about a population register.
The only solution to this is to keep a Big Brother-style single record of holding all the information that's known about an individual address against that address. And there are good civil rights and good data protection reasons why that may not be a good thing to do. But the flip side of that is, if we don't do that, then simply counting where people live, where people work, becomes extraordinarily difficult. The whole issue of identity cards, a national population register, and the civil rights and data protection issues surrounding the sort of information we want to be kept about individuals are going to influence the way that address registers are put together.
Where have all the young men gone? Long time passing. Where have all the young men gone? Long time ago.
Since I first went looking for the missing young men last spring, the Office for National Statistics has revised the figures in 15 local authorities and added another 100,000 people to the population figures. It's been a significant climb down for the ONS from when they first declared 2001 as the most accurate census ever. But they don't plan to make any further revisions. Simon Briscoe of the Financial Times is still not convinced that the statisticians have got it right or that the missing young men have been accounted for.
Had it been children missing or old people missing or people from different religions or ethnic groups, there are pressure groups that would have brought this to a head. But, you know, in a sense, no one cares about young men, and young men don't care about not being counted. The ONS ought to be doing a lot of research into why young men in particular don't like being caught in official surveys. And until that sort of subject is aggressively attacked by them, I don't think I'll have any faith that future censuses will get it right.